Welcome to Old Talent John's La Liga Weekly, where the title race is being fought out by Antoine Griezmann's former clubs, while the Frenchman's uncle blames it all on Lionel Messi. I bet he couldn't do it at Burnley on a Wednesday night. Add your own French accent. Leo is sick of being blamed for everything that goes wrong at Barca. Okay, it was all Ter Stegen's fault. Although Messi was as quiet at the Metropolitano as when the tax inspectors turn up and ask him where he keeps his cash. Still, at least he doesn't have 999 million euros of debt. I hope Atletico Madrid can print their own currency, because selling Kieran Trippier isn't going to cover that. But Simeone did finally beat Barcelona in La Liga, and it was good for the old men amongst us to watch Atleti forming up with a back seven. That's how football goes. They're second, despite having only played eight games. Only Real Sociedad are above them. They won 1-0 at Cadiz, which is a proper Champions scoreline. Cadiz dressed like Brazil 1982, but employed the less than sophisticated hoof it anywhere strategy. Injury hit Real Madrid got a draw at Villarreal, because even the Linos have lost track of when the flag is supposed to go up. And that was a good excuse for Villarreal's defenders not to do any defending. But another penalty pegged back the champions. No sign of Real Madrid at the moment. We're recording this on Tuesday, so we can also talk about the match that had Monday night La Liga written all over it. Athletic against Betis. Poor old Manuel Pellegrini, who is struggling, as I unfortunately predicted at the start of the season, struggling to inspire Real Betis, which is a team that needs a lot of inspiring. Where are we going to start, Terry? Shall we start with the big, in theory, the big game of the weekend? So Atleti beating Barcelona. And yep. Should we do the positive first? Should we do how well Atleti are playing?
Yeah, I thought it was a strange game. I mean, don't get me wrong, I didn't think that Barcelona were good by any means. By a long stretch of the imagination, they lacked penetration. They never really troubled Oblak. There didn't really seem to be a plan from Barcelona in terms of how they would break down Atletico or get behind Atletico. So that was that. And I think we have to bear in mind, I don't think Atletico were great. I think when you look at it, if it had ended 0-0, we probably wouldn't be hammering Barcelona as much as we are. We would probably be saying, well, it's not the worst result in the world away from home against Atletico Madrid to get the 0-0 draw, which is what it should have been. I mean, it was a major error from Ter Stegen. I know there were other errors leading up to in the build-up. PK, Sergio Roberto getting caught in two minds, giving the ball away. But there was no way Ter Stegen should have been where he was. I mean, there's plenty of work for Carrasco to do. If Ter Stegen is in an orthodox position in goal, Clement Longley would have got across to put up some resistance. So suddenly to see the ball just be clipped over the halfway line and the goalkeeper racing out.
Yeah, because you watch it on TV, you're not expecting that, are you? Because you think,
no.
When you see PK give the ball away, you think, oh, there could be in trouble here.
Yeah,
and then you
exactly.
Think, where did he come from?
I know that modern-day goalkeepers, you know, like to play like a sweeper role sometimes, yeah. And they're out of their goal. But that was
a number 10.
He was just approaching the halfway line. So when he lunges in and Carrasco does get a nice touch, it's not till you see it on replay that he actually, it's a nice bit of skill to flick the ball through the legs of Ter Stegen. And then he finished it off without a second thought, didn't he? Which, it's not easy, trust me. It's, you know, I know it's an open goal, but he was 35 yards out, but he was just, his instinct was instant. And he would just rifled it at home. And it was the difference between the two teams. I mean, Atletico didn't have an abundance of chances. They didn't have, they didn't dominate possession. But what we saw was, you made it, alluded to it in the intro, the joke about the back seven. It was a back five. But in theory, I mean, it lined up with three central defenders and Carrasco and Trippier as the wing-backs. And to be honest, they did play in a midfield position. So it was easy. It's easy for us to say, oh, God, the last thing football needs is Atletico are good enough with a back four and two central defenders. And now all of a sudden they've got three. And Hermoso fits that role perfectly well. So it's been a good period for him because, you know, he's there last season, didn't play much. Been playing at left back, and to have a centre back in a three that is comfortable moving out to the full back positions means that Carrasco playing ahead of him doesn't have to play in that left back role. Yeah. So essentially, Trippier and Carrasco were midfield players. It was almost a 3-4-3, and it suited Atletico. But what they were quick to do, Trippier and Carrasco, when they were out of possession and they were defending in their own half, they were in the full back position. So, you know, they retreated quickly And therefore, they made it really hard for Barcelona to break them down. But I didn't think there was a lot between the two teams. The goal is the difference. Then we reflect on the result, the scoreline, and then we make our judgments based on the result as opposed to the performance of both teams.
Yeah. So will we see, without a formation that Simeone put together for Barcelona, or will we see that in other games where they might be considered the underdog? So, you know, in the later stages of the Champions League and when they play Bayern again.
Yeah, I think what we've seen from Atletico in the last, I would say that after lockdown, when play resumed, and now we're seeing that Simeone has different plans. You know, I've liked in the past the one where he has the centre forward, Costa or Suarez, and then two players dropping deeper. Could be João Felix, could be Llorente, could be Carrasco playing in that Correa, playing in that slightly deeper role. Now we're seeing another plan, you know, so he has options. And I think it's he can use this option in two different ways as well. He can play, you know, three at the back with Amoso playing as a left-sided central defender alongside Jimenez, Savic, Felipe as well, and really push the wing-backs on. He could even change them. I mean, we've got Renan Lodi as well that can play in that left wing-back position, who's lost his place, has fallen out of favour. So, or he could use it as a back five. And he could play Lodi and Trippier alongside the three central defenders and keep them at home. So there are, you know, different variations. And that's probably what's making Atletico formidable this season. I mean, the back end of last season, this season, it's a huge amount of games unbeaten. The one blot in their copybook has been the Bayern Munich result. But it might have done them good, you know. It might have just focused their mind on, you know, I think they're still going to qualify out the group. They're finishing second place. But now, that you know, they're in a fantastic run of form. Only conceded two goals this season. And they do seem to have the firepower and the creativity in midfield to cause teams problems. So because of the result, Atletico are deemed to have been the better team. I thought it was very close. But Atletico do, you know, manage to do that, get results. And for Simeone to beat Barcelona for the first time in La Liga is a huge monkey off his back.
Right. So obviously, there's always lots said about Lionel Messi. Now, I think we've got the right to criticise Terry because we've done countless podcasts in which we've sung the praises of the guy and said he's the best, you know, and, you know, said what an amazing player he is. Is there anything new to say, or is it just that, you know, he played like he's been playing in a big and important game?
Yeah, I think so. I think it is, you know, it's quite frustrating to see. I think that the position that he's playing at the moment is not clear. And it's, at times, I think they get clogged up with him and Griezmann, both looking to do the same job. So whereas it was Suarez, Luis Suarez, he was the centre forward, so Messi could play off of him. You couldn't really identify at the weekend which one was up front, which one was dropping deeper. And at times they both did the same thing at the same time. And that in turn led to Barcelona lacking any penetration. I mean, Messi touched it, I think, twice in the penalty area. And, you know, he didn't really get any success in terms of his dribbling. I have to say that I get frustrated with the attitude at the moment from Messi. It doesn't look great. The body language doesn't look great. We're not expecting him to be charging all over the pitch, racking up, you know, 12K a game. But there is an element of when he drops deep, there's only one thing on his mind, and that's to try and take out the whole defence. You're not going to do it against Atletico Madrid when you repeatedly try the same thing, when you drop deep, then try to go on a run where you beat four or five players to end up getting a shot in from just outside the penalty box. So, and I think that the Messi problem is part of, you know, a bigger problem for Barcelona in the fact that they don't really seem, even with Koeman, to have a clear plan. We thought he did with the 4-2-3-1, but I've been disappointed with Koeman in terms of how he changes the game, you know, in terms of substitutions. It doesn't really seem to have any sort of other plan to do anything different. And it ends up, I think every time they've gone behind Barcelona, they haven't come back and won anything. His changes haven't made any differences. And it ends up looking a real mess, which it did at the weekend. So it's going to be tough for Barcelona this year in their current form. Tough to finish in the top four, I would suggest.
And the injuries, obviously the new injuries. So Sergio Roberto is out, I think, a couple of months, I think, is the prognosis there. Piqué less certain, but it could be a longer time if he ends up needing an operation. So, and I guess we'll find out whether there's any funds left at the club to sign a defender, but it would seem important, wouldn't it? It's an extraordinary indictment of their transfer dealings in recent years that we're in a situation now talking about Barcelona struggling to put out a full team of defenders, a full complement of defenders.
Yeah, and Samuel Umtiti is fit.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
just not being included.
It's another it's a mystery, isn't it?
Doesn't even make the bench.
Yeah.
So somehow, I mean, they've got a World Cup winner who played all the games from France, won the World Cup. I know his form has been awful. His injury record has been awful since the World Cup. But surely, you know, he's not at an age yet where he's finished. And, you know, it's up to the this responsibility of the coach to recover his fitness and to recover his form. And that's not a bad option to have. You know, someone with his talent, his ability, he can't be that bad. He can't be that unfit. So that's, you know, something that Koeman's going to have to make sure that he uses now. Ronald Araujo is injured as well, so that's an issue. De Jong can play there, as we've seen, as a sweeper when Barcelona are in possession, but he's not a centre-back.
Not good at it. That's not why they paid all that money, though, is it?
No, and when you play against top-class teams that can have a bit more possession than some of the teams, you know, in the bottom half of the division, and they've got decent centre-forwards, then you wouldn't want him, you know, playing centre-half against, say, Villarreal or Real Sociedad, who are playing well at the moment with, you know, we'll have possession, got good strikers, then I think we would see the Youngs, you know, lack of you know, playing at centre-back. I mean, if you're centre-forward, you'd quite fancy playing against the Young if your team are going to have plenty of the ball. So it's going to be a problem.
How significant was it that they didn't put anybody up? So we're watching the game on La Liga TV. Nobody appears. Just a big gap. Just a big silence and a clunk when Barcelona are supposed to be doing an interview. And then apparently later, Pedri, well, we have seen now, Pedri came out. So a 17-year-old boy came out and did the interviews. I mean, that's a lack of leadership within the squad, isn't it? Someone's got to come and have the cojones to come and explain what's going on.
100% to send out 17-year-old, that was terrible, really poor. Now, whether that's down to the manager as well again. I mean, I'm hammering Koeman on this today, but that is down to the manager, and the players have to do as they're told. They have to realise that they have, you know, stuff that they are obliged to do, and for the rest of the team to allow the 17-year-old to go out and face the music was poor from the manager and poor from the players. You know, someone should have stepped up. Obviously, some couldn't. Piqué is the obvious one that you think might have, if he'd been in a position to, you know, to conduct the interview. But then we look at, you know, the other players that are still, you know, Pjanic is an experienced player. Messi is an experienced player. Griezmann, experienced player. There were players that should have stepped up and not allowed the 17-year-old Pedri to be the one to take the fall.
Yes, entirely. Right, other big game of the weekend. Technically, actually, a bigger game, isn't it? Because it's two title contenders. Sorry, Barca fans. But Villarreal 1, Real Madrid 1. So another injury hit, big team. It is a theme. You know, we'll get Jurgen Klopp on the podcast one of these days and tell us all off for making them play football on TV and get paid millions for it. Yeah, sorry, yeah, Jurgen. Yeah.
And so, with massive squads as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Massive they've assembled.
That they've nicked from medium-sized clubs. Minamino's hardly played a game this season. I don't think he's started a game this season. And yet, it's everybody's fault for, you know, expecting them to play games. Anyway, there are two sides of every argument, but we won't go too deeply into that one. But we will go into Real Madrid getting a 1-1 draw away to Villarreal. It's not a bad result, actually. I mean, a slightly weird start to the game, wasn't it, with the goal by Mariano? I mean, the weirdest thing in it was Villarreal's defenders' lack of reaction or reaction to the flag going up, like it was 1992 and everyone stopped when the linesman put his flag up. The lino got it wrong, didn't he? The lino, I think what happened is he sees, I think it's Mariano who comes, it was offside, comes back as if he's going to play the ball, doesn't play the ball, and the game, the play goes on, and then he mistakenly panicked a bit, stuck his flag up. Oh, no, sorry, put it straight back down again. And Villarreal used that as an excuse to not defend properly in the next, you know, as the ball comes into the box.
Yeah, and it was the correct decision, you know, was the outcome, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's Lucas Vasquez. He could step back in. He looked like he was going to get control of the ball and didn't. Stepped aside. The play continued. No, it was dreadful play from Villarreal. It just goes to show the mindset of players now. They play when they know the flag hasn't gone up, but they think it's going to go up.
Yeah.
And then a player will have a shot, defenders then look around and the linesman puts the flag up. And then they, you know, will shrug their shoulders and look across at him. But the mindset now is if the flag has gone up, it must definitely be offside.
Yeah,
because they're used to the opposite now, aren't they? They're used to chasing back towards goal, thinking, I'm sure he's offside, but I better defend it. Now, as soon as the flag goes up, they stop, knocked off. But it was the right outcome. It was you know, the linesman was too quick for his own good. He thought Vasquez was going to touch the ball, and then that case, he would have been offside, but he didn't. So I think the right decision was made, and it was the perfect start for Real Madrid. I mean, they were missing lots of players. We have to give them that. I think it's a decent result away from home, but we have to look at the way that the Real Madrid played, and I don't think they played particularly well despite getting off to a fantastic start. By the end of the game, the Villarreal substitutions made a big difference, and by the end of the game, I think Villarreal were definitely worth the draw. So it was, there's issues to look at in the Real Madrid performance. I think Eden Hazard, another game where it's passed him by, if I'm being honest. And we're still a long way from seeing the Chelsea version of Hazard. Mariano Diaz did as well as he could, but he didn't get a lot of service. But I think he's clearly shown that, he's a player that should have had more playing time over the last couple of seasons. So that was a positive for them. I didn't think they had a real particular plan in midfield. Casemiro is such a miss because he's the only player that can play that position.
Yeah.
And what we saw at the weekend was Kroos dropping deep, Modric ferreting about in midfield, and I thought he was excellent again, and then Odegaard playing ahead of them. So there was no, shape in midfield to compete against the Villarreal midfield, who outnumbered them, Ibora, Trigueros, Parejo. And often than not, we kept seeing a midfield player running into the box unopposed. Parejo should have scored with a header. He should have scored with the cutback when it went to him on the edge of the box and he was totally unmarked. He just run past all the midfield players. And I think Chukwueze did the same for the goal. He just bent his run across midfield, in behind, nice pass into him, and Courtois brought him down. So the midfield is a problem. The shape of the midfield, and I think it lent itself to Villarreal dominating that part of the pitch numerically. And Odegaard didn't influence the game much, as I said. Toni Kroos sat deep, didn't pick runners up. Modric was the only one out of the three that really sort of I wouldn't say covered himself in glory, but had a more than decent game. So I think ultimately it's a half decent result for Real Madrid away from home against a team that's playing well, that scores goals, only conceded through another penalty. But there are, they're not convincing at the moment, Real Madrid, that's for sure.
Just on Casemiro before we move on. I think ultimately he'll be very kindly judged by history, Casemiro. And I'm going to say now in 2020, I think he will get too good a write-up in history. Because I think you will look back at the Champions Leagues that he won and the Liga titles that he won and the fact that he was a Brazil international. I think he's all right. And I think you're right said that he's the only one they've got. And so I know they've sort of tried others in the past because Llorente was sort of brought in with a thought that he might do something similar. Yarramendi, many years going back. He's the only one they stuck to. He does the job. It's an essential job. And so he is a crucial part of that team. But I don't think he does anything that is particularly special.
Yep, no, I agree with you. I think it's quite damning that Real Madrid have never brought anyone else to play in that position or produced a younger player to play in that position. And those people you mentioned, even Kovacic was used in that position sometimes. None of them are Casemiro. They're midfield players that can, drop deep, sit deep. But it's not there, we're seeing with Marco Llorente, that it's not his ideal role. So you would have thought at some stage they would have bought someone else as well. It's been a long time now since Casemiro has been part of that successful Real Madrid team in the Champions League. And it happens time and time again. Whenever he's missing, they lack that fundamental player to play that position. That's what he is, fundamental player. Mm. I mean, his basic fundamentals in that position, when he's concentrated and focused and doing his job properly, he's a good option for Real Madrid. In terms of, is he the best in that position in the world, one of the best? I agree with you. I think he's all right. But the role he fulfills is really important. And it's quite shocking that there's been no competition. He was in the right place at the right time. If we go back, he went out on loan to Porto, didn't he, where he didn't appear to have much of a future at Real Madrid. And then when he came back, he was the only player in that position available. And to his credit, he grabbed his opportunity. I can remember when he first started playing on a regular basis, and the conclusion was, this is the player that Real Madrid have been looking for, you know, just to play that unselfish position, you know, yeah. Let the other players go and play and sit in front of the back four. He has days where he gets a little bit carried away and goes and plays in different positions, and it's cost Real Madrid, you know, a number of times. But in general, I think he does a good job, but they still should have someone else, either better or, you know, to at least to give cover. But they haven't got that. So when he doesn't play, Kroos can't do it. Modric can't do it, of course. Odegaard, the three at the weekend. It's an issue for them. We've seen Fede Valverde tried there, but that's not his strength. He's a player that covers the pitch. So it is an issue that, you know, Real Madrid have yet to, you know, resolve. And it doesn't look as if, listen, it's Real Madrid. The last player they want to be looking at is an orthodox defensive holding midfield player that is unselfish and just sits there. It's not what they want to be spending their money on.
No,
so that's him,
no.
Casemiro.
No, I'm not advocating we get the new Thomas Gravesen back in at Real Madrid. Okay, I should just say, by the way, welcome to Nicholas, who is our latest patron. So thank you to everybody at patreon.com. This one is a free one. We later in the week, we'll be looking back as a round of Champions League, yet another round of Champions League. The football never stops. And Europa League. So we'll come back later in the week and do a Patreons only one for that. So it's patreon.com/LTEL. And you can join from, I think it's £4.50 or $5 a month. Thank you to Nicholas. Thank you to everybody.
Thank you, Nicholas.
We should go to the top of the league, Terry, of course, shouldn't
yes.
we? We keep being rude about Real Sociedad. So, Cadiz, 0, Real Sociedad, 1. And like I said in the intro, they're learning, you know, they're grinding these out at times, aren't they? I know they,
yes.
I know they dominated the game, but yes.
Yeah, and they should have won by a lot more. It was Ledesma played well in goal. Real Sociedad were a little bit wasteful in front of goal, but you know they're the best player on the pitch in Januzaj. Mm. He was fantastic. His link-up play with David Silva and Isak is really coming to fruition. They have such a good squad. That Porto is a really good player. He was on the bench. He came on for Januzaj. And you know, all around the pitch, we're talking about holding midfield players. They've got about three or four there. At Real Sociedad, that they've produced themselves, going back to my point about Real Madrid. So they're in great shape. They have finally got the win. And as I say, should have been more. They played well. Cadiz had 32% possession, so it's going up slightly. and that's against a team that likes to keep the ball. So I still think Cadiz are going to find it tough. But for Real Sociedad, it was a game we expected them to win. They made hard work of it because they didn't take the chances that came their way. But again, it's another solid performance and a solid result again.
So talk to us about Januzaj then, because the Januzaj, if you draw a straight line between the kid who came through at Manchester United and everybody said, oh, wow, this kid is the new, whoever who's going to be the new version of, to how he played yesterday, playing for a club at the top of La Liga, you'd have said, yeah, that's perfect. That's exactly the timeline you would expect. But obviously, in the meantime, he went up, he went down and up and all over the place. It's interesting, isn't it, to see a guy at a relative stage of maturity now give the impression that he's actually going to produce what we sort of expected and hoped of him as a very young kid.
Yeah, I remember watching him. I commentated on a Manchester United Tottenham Hotspur under-21, 23 game a few years back, and he was playing in it. And it was his own age group at that stage. Mm. And honestly, it was like watching a grown-up playing amongst, you know, his peers. He was sensational. So having seen him that night, always thought, this, you know, he's a player here that Manchester United have got that should go on to great things. It never happened at Manchester United, Dortmund, Sunderland. Sometimes we see with younger players, if you know their career path isn't looked after by others, then they can lose their way. And therefore, the loans are important for young players that go out on loan. We've seen Kubo not playing on loan at Villarreal. It's important the clubs make the right decisions in terms of the youngsters' progress. And sometimes it just, you know, as a young player, I would hate it personally to have been loaned out all over the place.
Yeah.
As a young player making your way, because, you know, you want to have a home. You want to, you know, have some consistency in, you know, where you're playing, how you're being coached, you know, where you're being picked to play. When you start going out on loan and not getting games and you know, maybe you're coming on as a sub or you're playing in a different position, you're playing for a team that doesn't particularly suit your style of play, they can lose their way. Interestingly, I just saw a story this morning about Alen Halilovic.
Yeah, going to Birmingham.
Going to Birmingham. He's been without a club at the age of 24 since the season started.
Yeah.
And he's another, I remember watching him for Croatia against Argentina at Upton Park in a friendly. I went because it was Messi, me and my son went. Mm. And Halilovic was one of the best players on the pitch.
Yeah.
And at that stage, I thought, he's got some talent. And again, he's been another one of those that's, you know, been loaned out here, there and everywhere, transferred, never really found the home. And at the age of 24, Birmingham, if he can get his form back, might pick up a really good player. So, you know, we see it with lots of players that go out on loan. It doesn't particularly work. Martin Odegaard spent some time out on loan. One of the loans worked in it, Real Sociedad. The others, I don't think, were particularly successful. So it's not easy for a young player that keeps, you know, changing countries, changing clubs each season to establish some consistency. So, thankfully, Yenis is now.
So can I just in the headline, can I just put that going to Sunderland wrecked Yanazai's career? Is that
and Dortmund? Yeah. I mean, it never worked for him there either. And you know, it's a coach is important as well. Agusil is clearly getting the best out of Yanazai, playing him in his best position. There's competition for places. As I said, if he's not playing, Paul Tu's playing. Two fine players. But at the weekend, Yanazai, the tricks, the skills, the cross for the goal. You know, he should have scored. He missed a couple of chances. He made the chance himself and should have scored. But he was great to watch at the weekend. And I thoroughly enjoy watching him now.
One more before we do a little break then, Terry. Sevilla 4, Celta Vigo 2. So Celta bottom of the league, aren't they?
Yeah.
And yet, you know, they obviously led when Nolito made it 2-1. And the two goals came, the third and fourth goals came relatively late. I think they were both deflected, weren't they? The Escudero and Munir. Goals. So, have you got a little bit of sympathy then for Celta Vigo, or should Sevilla have won that perhaps more comfortably?
No, I have sympathy for them. I thought it looked the plan looked clearer at the weekend. Eduardo Caldet, isn't it? Is that how we pronounce it, his name? The new coach. There was a 4-3-3 with players playing in the right positions, and it looked, you know, he had a it was top. Heavy in terms of attacking players playing. But I think that, you know, it reflects in going forward that possibly his first game away at Sevilla was one where he probably thought, well, I'm not going to get hammered if we get beat in my first game away from home. We're a team that's struggling. And he had a go at Sevilla. And Sevilla were fortunate. You know, did the larger share of play in the second half. But the two late goals, I think they were well into near the end of the game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
85th and 87th minute, the two winning goals, both heavily deflected. So I think Celta can take the positives from that game. And I just think they've got the players. I just think they need a clear, concise plan from the manager and make it a lot simpler than what we were getting under Oscar Garcia. So positives there for Celta and for Sevilla. It was a much needed win. It puts them back in the you know, the race for, you know, the title. We can't rule them out of it yet. And Nesri got a great goal, didn't he? Great header. Koundé gets the first. And Escudero and Munir with the two late goals made sure that they got all the points. But that was a relief for Sevilla to get the win against a team they should be beating. But Celta put up a good fight.
Right, let's have a quick break. I'll do my own quick advert going into the break. My book is still available for sale, by the way, everybody. So it's The 50. Football's Most Influential Players. It's from Pitch Publishing, and it is On Amazon, if you live near me, if you know me, you can come and buy one from me. But Amazon, it's on it. All the usual online Waterstones, W.H. Smiths and all of that. So my name, John Driscoll, and then it's the 50 football's most influential players. And we'll take a quick break and we'll see if there are any adverts knocking around. Right, welcome back. So thank you to all the patrons, patreon.com/LTEL, and thank you to everybody else for listening as well. You're all welcome, of course, and we love you all, and we admire your admiration of Spanish football. So, obvious Monday night, Terry. The reason they had to bring back Monday nights was for Athletic to play Betis on a Monday night. Obviously, big clubs, no European involvement. I mean, huge, huge clubs, and we've talked about Athletic's problems so far this season. No sign of any problems, was there, last night against Betis?
No, blew them away. It was a much-changed Athletic midfield. That was the big difference, wasn't it? We saw, you know, all the things I've been saying about Athletic with Bale, they did last night.
Yeah.
They haven't been doing them. Kepa and Valencia, Chichi, yeah, were roaring forward.
Getting forward. Yeah, actually scored.
The two midfielders... The two midfielders, Danny Garcia and Unai Lopez, have been playing there. They just sit in midfield.
Yeah.
Then last night, we have Mikel Vesca and Ventidor. They were up and down the pitch. They were getting forward. They were getting back. Neither one of them just sat and stayed. What you get from Athletic normally is both sit there. So therefore, I've moaned about the connection between midfield and attack, that there is a lack of connection. So you have the back six, the fullbacks weren't getting forward, and you have the front four chopping and changing positions. And you know, it was back to front. There was no build-up in midfield, no real spells of prolonged possession. And we saw all of that last night. They played with, you know, real urgency. You could see they were playing for the manager, whose job was clearly on the line. That's evident. And the changes he made. Even Villa Libre playing up front, I thought, played really well. And he lent himself to the possession game more. He showed up for the ball more. It wasn't that long ball in behind for Iñaki Williams. It wasn't the long ball forward for Raúl García to flick on and head. Villalibre's movement was good. So they were able to play the ball into him, then join up. So they were fantastic last night, Athletic. Why we don't see that more often from them, I don't know. I'm sure their supporters will be frustrated in the fact that their performance in that game against Betis, that's their true potential. And we need to see that on a regular basis now. So full marks to Garitano, he made the changes. The urgency was there from the players. Yeah. Betis. Now, Pellegrini, they got beat thrashed earlier this year from someone. Can't think who it was. And he said that he didn't see that performance coming. And we all went, yeah, we saw it last year a few times. Yeah. And it was exactly the same last night. They, you know, played with the two holding midfielders, but there was no protection in front of the back four. Victor Ruiz came in for his debut. I think Victor Ruiz is a decent player, but it'd be a full debut he won't want to remember.
Yeah.
Every cross into the penalty area caused Betis problems. Claudio Bravo is far too busy in goal. And they didn't offer anything in attack. So apart from that,
so is it with Betis? Is it I saw Graham Hunter on Twitter. Is it that they? Because Graham's view is that they just didn't buy very good defenders. Is that? Do you agree with that, or do you think it is more systemic? Is it? It's something that Pellegrini could do something about.
Oh, no, I think it's something he can do about. I agree with Graham. I think that, but they haven't spent a lot of money on anybody, have they? Yeah. It's hard for us to say. You know, they've wasted their money. Borja Iglesias clearly hasn't proved value for money. Fekir has been pretty decent. But then if you have Fekir, Canales, Joaquin, Teo, and we go through the whole list, they're all very similar in the fact that they don't particularly help out defensively much. So they're great to watch. And when Betis play well, they're one of the best teams to watch in La Liga. No doubt whatsoever. But they have a soft centre. And they're easy to play against at times. And that's probably where Pellegrini needs to make sure that this performance against Athletic can't be repeated. There has to be a platform for them that, you know, if they're under pressure or they concede a goal early on, that they don't just crumble and just open up and play their expensive football and, you know, loads of creative attacking players. And that happens, what we saw last night. It was a poor performance for Betis, excellent from Athletic, but Betis are, frankly, at times far too easy to play against.
Yeah, worst defensive record in La Liga. Right, Granada 1, Valladolid 3. Now, on paper, a bit of a surprise scoreline, given how well we've got used to watching Granada. But I've always sensed that there is a danger with Granada this season, that there will be moments at which things just go wrong for them, because there's a lot of pressure on them to keep sustaining the level that they've been able to reach in the last 18 months.
Yeah, and hopefully they get out of this mini slump. It's a mini slump. I mean, the disaster from the game before, the international break, where 9 players had to make their debut because of the coronavirus protocols. But no, they've just got to brush it off. They weren't particularly good in this game, which will be a slight worry to Diego Martinez. But I agree with you, Valladolid's back-to-back wins. I think people, regular listeners of the podcast, know that I've got a little bit of a soft spot for Valladolid. I have no idea why. I just think they're plucky and they're well-organised. They stick with their manager in a tough period. So perhaps it's Ronaldo who's the owner, leans me to being, you know, favouring them slightly. And also I think they, you know, they have a tiny budget. And, you know, the work they do, the work Sergio does is admirable. The latest one to come through is Marcos Andre, who scored one of the goals and looks to be a good partnership with Sergio Guardiola. And that was much needed after the departure of Enes Unal. And, you know, they're back to their 4-4-2. Lots of players I like and respect. And back-to-back win season, get out the relegation zone for the first time this season. And, you know, that's a really good win for Valladolid away from home. A little bit of confidence from the previous win. And, you know, I'm expecting them not to go racing up the table, I expect them to keep, you know, relatively clear. It's going to be a battle all the way through. They're not going to be, you know, 10 points clear relegation. But I do and have always expected them to maintain their position in the league this season.
The rest of the games are all draws. Alaves were 2 up against Valencia. They got their goals back 72 and 77. Now, one of our regulars, might have been Richard Cosmala, was saying that... Machina's lost it, basically, and it will never come back. The days of Girona, where everyone loved him, and they were a revelation. They played exciting football, but since then he's been sort of trying to catch bubbles or something. You know, he just hasn't been able to get hold of a team since then.
No, and I'm not sure this is a good fit with him with Alaves, because Alaves are a 4-4-2. And they're hardworking. Manu Garcia in midfield, I know he's getting on now, but that he typifies what you get from Victor LaGuardia, you know, gutsy, wholehearted players, aggressive. And they're not the style of players that Pablo Machin particularly wants to be using. He's forced into playing that, you know, the two up front because they got so many goals last year. So it's kind of I think what lets him down in this one is at 2-0 up, he made negative substitutions. And I think that leads it then to, you know, you if it doesn't work, which it didn't in this case, and Valencia put on, I think sometimes as a coach, you have to realise when you take off a striker, put Manu Garcia on as an extra midfield player when you're 2-0 up, you should always counteract with your decision you make with, well, what are they going to do? You know, and Valencia were losing and they were clearly going to have to make changes and they were going to have to be positive attacking changes. So, therefore, you are at times guilty of handing the initiative to an opposing coach. And that's what happened in this game. And the subs that came on for Valencia, Guedes was much better than we've seen in recent times. And Manu Vallejo was the main instigator of the comeback. A comeback in which they should have won. I mean, Gamero has missed an absolute sitter. And you're thinking, Kevin Gamero doesn't normally miss them. And it was a wild finish as well, wasn't it? No composure, just teed it, whacked it, and high and wide. So I thought Valencia, I like their spirit. I think they've made a habit this year of coming back from behind and picking up points. And we know their troubles, but I think their spirit has to be applauded. Guillamon with another young player that they've got his first goal as a senior player. So Yeah, Valencia are doing slightly better than I expected. But this is 2-0 up, 16 minutes in, Alaves. It's not a game you should be dropping points in.
Yeah. So from the bottom, it's Celta Vigo bottom, and then there are three teams basically with 7 points, are Celta, Huesca and Levante. That's sorted on goal difference. Obviously, at the end of the season in Spain, it will be sorted on head-to-head if teams are on the same points. But it makes sense to do it on goal difference until you know who's going to be on the same points. So Huesca, actually useful point, wasn't it? Away to Osasuna, 1-1 draw. Sandro Ramirez got, actually, I was going to say a rare goal, but he got one the other week, didn't he?
Yeah, yes. Banging the partnership with Rafa Mir should work.
Yeah.
I mean, you got Rafa Mir, I've become a big fan of Rafa Mir this year. It's he was taken off early in this game as well. Yeah. And I think, again, that refers back to the Alaves substitution that, you know, you can hand the initiative to an opponent. Osasuna were much better and the much better team in the second half. Deserved the point, probably deserved the win. But it's 7 points, 7 draws for Huesca.
Yeah.
They've only lost 3.
Yeah.
So that close to, you know, becoming a team that can to push themselves up the table. But 10 games in, and you haven't won one, that takes its toll as well.
8 goals, isn't it?
And you get a 1-0 lead early on, very early on, and then you're going to spend the rest of the game trying to hang on to the 1-goal lead and hang on for, you know, 3 points. And that's not the way it works. So the sooner they can get themselves across the line, confidence will be improved. Anxiety must be going through the roof. That, you know, they're scoring, you know, looking like they can score goals, but just can't get that first win in the season. So 10 games in, no wins, does make you wonder whether, you know, they're going to be able to bridge that gap between drawing, being hard to beat, and becoming a team that you know does pick up 3 points on a more regular basis.
So Levante 1, Elche 1. Levante, the other team, on 7 points. Elche 10th in the league, have only played 8 games. So, you know, going remarkably well. But you look at the table, though. I don't want to go back to previous conversation, but you look at the table from the bottom up. Celta, probably too low. Huesca, Levante, Valladolid, Eibar, Alaves, Osasuna, Barcelona. And it's mad, it's that, isn't it? That's the mad one. When you know, all the other teams down there, fair enough. And they say Barcelona, it's just insane, isn't it? So Levante got a 1-1 draw with Elche, and then the other one that we're missing, which I must confess, Terry, I haven't seen any of Eibar, Getafe.
Eibar, Getafe, the highlight was Brian Hill.
He
was the player that both managers were talking about after the game. Both managers were hugely disappointed in their attacking output. And, you know, it was kind of, if I'd have been predicting a scoreline in this, I think it might have been 0-0. So it's certainly, Brian Hill is a player that's hopefully that loan's what we were talking about earlier for a young player. It's his second loan. And, you know, he's getting regular playing time. Eibar looks like he's going to be an important player. So hopefully, you know, Sevilla will be looking at his form and looking at him and thinking he's one that we can definitely bring back in the future because he's showing clearly he has the ability and talent, work rate, the work ethic, all the things you need from a young player to succeed in a technical league like La Liga. So that was the highlight of that game. Nothing too much to write home about. Eibar clearly lacking the goal scoring touch. But we are in general in this league this season.
Yeah.
I looked at the top scorers. Oyarzabal is top scorer still with 6. Yeah. You know, some teams have played 10 games now. So I guess we're missing the Messi Ronaldo goal a game stat that we've had for the last 10, 15 years. You know, so it's a decent striker this year is getting 1 in 2.
It's actually gone up a bit. It's what we're getting, 2.43 goals per game, which is an improvement actually on where we were, because you had that weird situation where the Premier League every game was finishing 5-4 for a while, and La Liga was the opposite. And as with all these things, whenever you study numbers, you've got to study huge numbers and over a long period of time, because actually it's coming back into some kind of sense again. You know, now of not the wild results are leveling themselves out. That said, Barcelona are 13th in the league. So as you know, it's beginning to settle down a little bit, and Barcelona You think, hang on, and you're still there. That's crazy. Just quickly on Brian Hill then, Terry, is he? How good could he be? Is it, you know, a regular for Sevilla? Is he going to be a Spain international? Is he going to be a 50 million, 100 million pound player?
I think we need to see him in a better car than Leganes and Eibar. And that car would be Sevilla. And I'm pretty sure that with what Sevilla have seen last year, and Leganes as well, a difficult season, wasn't it, for a young player? First season in the top flight. We saw him briefly at Sevilla, getting a few opportunities before the move to Leganes. And now at Eibar, he's clearly their best attacking option. And I would hope, and I do feel that Sevilla, with Munchie in particular, do have a plan for these young players. Now, the plan might be, if he's a success, one of two, sell him and, make decent money. But I think he will go to a rival of Sevilla. So if Sevilla were to sell him, to another club in the Liga, it would be a Villarreal. It wouldn't be a Real Sociedad. They don't need that type of player, but that type of level. So then we can see, how good he's going to be in the future. But at the moment, he's great to watch. It talked about Januzaj. He was the same at the weekend as well, and Hatafe did try to kick him all over the place. And he stood up to that and wanted the ball at all times, even though he was going to be under pressure. So his career is certainly going in the right direction.
Right. I think we'll leave it there. I think we've done everybody. So thank you very much, Terry. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. The Patreons will be back with a European special later in the week. If you wish to join the Patreons, please do. So go on patreon.com/LTEL, and we'll see you for another La Liga podcast next week. Bye-bye.